To quote Thomas Jefferson, a well-informed citizenry is the best defense against tyranny. Welcome to the Constitution Solution, one podcast under God, where we discuss the basics of our constitutional republic and how our freedoms are being seized by public officials, both elected and unelected. I'm Mark DeLuzio, a former candidate for the U.S. Congress and a Gold Star father. Join me as we learn together how we can save this unique experiment that we call America. Hi, Mark DeLuzio for episode 55. This is going to be called The Genius of the Electoral College. What is the Electoral College? It's the way we elect the president of the United States, right? And I think you probably all heard about it. And a lot of criticism over the Electoral College. As a matter of fact, some states wanted to do away with the Electoral College, which is not their right to do, since the voting of the president through the Electoral College system is mandated by the Constitution. And the Supremacy Clause in the Constitution says it's the law of the land, so you can't change it. But many states have tried, and they wanted to go to more of a popular vote count to elect the president, okay? And didn't want to give delegates away. So let's talk about what this is and why we have the Electoral College. And if you understand it, and it's not really easy to understand, but it's actually genius the way they did it, all right? When I say they, I'm talking about the founding fathers. One of the main reasons for the Electoral College, and there's a couple other reasons, but is that they wanted to have a balance between federalism and democracy. And when I say democracy, I mean popular vote, okay? So if you remember, we have two senators for every state, and we have congressmen based on population. And the way we do that math this time around is right now, legislated, there's 435 congressmen allocated in the Constitution. We take our census every 10 years, and we just took one in 2020. I think it came out to some 330 million people. They divide that by 435. And then each district, each of those 435 districts has to have that many people in the district. And then every 10 years, as you know, they go and draw all the lines and reconfigure the congressional districts and all that. And that's where all the gerrymandering goes into play and all kinds of other gamesmanship goes on. However, that's how the math is done. Okay, so if you're a small state like, let's say, Connecticut that has five congressmen, California has over 40 or 50, because of their population, you still have two senators. Every state has two senators. And that was a compromise because a certain amount of founding fathers wanted to have all the representative seats in Congress be based on population. And people said, well, that's not fair because small states like Rhode Island and Connecticut aren't going to get represented like New York or, you know, some other bigger state. So they compromised. It's okay, look, every state's going to have two senators, no matter what size you are. So that kind of goes towards balancing this out a little bit. Okay, not completely, but a little bit. And that was a compromise. Well, they wanted the voice of the voters in selecting the president, but they also wanted the voice of the states. So this is where I talk about federalism versus what they call democracy. And again, if you go back to democracy, we are a republic. Not a democracy, but democracy is mob rule. Now, if you think about income taxes, before the 16th Amendment, taxes had to come from the states in proportion to the population. But the states were the ones that paid the taxes to the federal government, not individuals. So we got away from that with the 16th Amendment. I'm just using another example of how the founders looked at federalism as opposed to, you know, this popular vote type of thing or individuals paying income taxes, which they were against. We are a union of people and a union of states. And so the Electoral College was designed to reflect that flavor of our republic, all right? The other thing they wanted to do is guard against what they called regionalism and rash popular sentiment. So let's just say there's a state that has 10 million voters in it. I'm making that number up out of the thin air. But there's a particular issue that's only germane to that area. And it gets voters out and it gets an undue amount of votes for candidate A versus candidate B. What the founders were afraid of is that the undue amount of people voting, let's say 9 million of the 10 million voters voted for candidate A, it would unduly weight their vote versus the rest of the country. So with the Electoral College, you get an Electoral College vote for each senator. Everybody gets two. And for each congressman. So Arizona, for example, has 9 congressmen. And, of course, they have their 2 senators like all the other states do. So they have 11 Electoral College votes. So if there's a big popular issue relative to Arizona that a presidential candidate is supporting, and 90% of the voters vote for that particular president, that's an undue weight coming from that regional issue if they only counted popular vote. So they'll be limited to 11 Electoral College votes, whether those votes are won by one vote, let's say it's 49-51, or by 90% of the votes, you're still going to get your Electoral College votes of 11 in Arizona. So hope that makes sense, because they didn't want any of these regional issues to overweight the national interests. So that's the other beauty about the Electoral College. Okay. So again, they call it either regionalism or, a check against rash, most likely short-term, popular sentiment. It was kind of a tough thing to do because, the Electoral College has come under fire. And, matter of fact, some states wanted to take Donald Trump off the ballot altogether. And no, you're not allowed to do that, okay? Now, there were 5 elections in our history where the losing presidential candidate got more popular votes than the winner. So the first one was back in 1824, all the way back. Andrew Jackson got more votes than John Quincy Adams, but lost the election to John Quincy. In 1876, Samuel J. Tilden won more popular votes than Rutherford B. Hayes. But Rutherford was the one that got the Electoral College votes, and he won. Grover Cleveland in 1888 garnered more votes than Benjamin Harrison. But Harrison won the presidential election because he had more Electoral College votes. In 2000, you probably remember this, Al Gore got more votes, but couldn't beat George W. Bush because George W. Bush got more Electoral College votes. This was kind of a crazy thing. That was that hanging Chad thing down in Florida, and that whole debacle about those votes. And then the Supreme Court had to finally rule. But, if Big Al Gore, Mr. Climate Change, if he had won his own state of Tennessee, he would have been president. He couldn't win his own state of Tennessee. So, although I'm not a big fan of George W. Bush, I'm less of a fan of Al Gore. And my hat's to, if you're listening from Tennessee, my hat's off to you. Thank you for not voting that guy in. And then the last one was 2016, where Hillary Clinton got more votes, supposedly, than Donald J. Trump. And she lost the election to Donald Trump. And I think that's where a lot of this, hey, we got to go to the popular vote and get rid of the Electoral College. It doesn't make sense. And, you know, if you think about it, it's such an easy but low resolution argument to make. Well, anybody who gets more votes should always be the winner, right? And everybody would nod their head. Yeah. Okay. No, that's not how it works, right? And if you really understand what these guys tried to do with this Electoral College, it's incredible. Now, there's no perfect system, right? And now I did an episode on ranked choice voting, which is horrendous to me. That is a horrendous one because somebody who comes in third could end up winning on the first round of voting. So ranked choice voting, we really have to stay away from. But some states do go by ranked choice voting, which is kind of crazy, right? And some municipalities do as well, like New York City in the primaries just recently. So again, we want to eliminate the small states' influence, okay? It does reinforce federalism, but also honors, you know, popular vote. So it kind of does a little bit of both. It encourages national campaigns where you have to campaign nationwide, right? Provides clear outcomes. But again, one of the negatives is it's complex and people don't understand the Electoral College. Matter of fact, they don't understand that you're voting for delegates. So in December, they go and cast their votes for the president. You don't really elect the president on election day, believe it or not. You're electing delegates from the state that you are voting in. So, and then in December, they have their delegate convention and they officially vote the president at that time. The cons are a disproportionate power. Small states have more influence. But in all due respect, I think that's what founders wanted to do, is give them more influence, because not total influence equal to a bigger state, but at least up the ante a little bit with how they would be counted when they get weighed in, all right? And sometimes these elections come down to two or three Electoral College votes. So, and again, they look at this as a negative, that, you know, a losing candidate on the popular, a winning candidate on the popular vote could lose the election because they don't get the Electoral Colleges. I don't know if that's a negative or not, but some people do think it is. The argument is also that safe states are ignored. If you know you're going to win a state, even if you're going to win it by 5%, you may stay away from that state and not campaign in that state. Because again, you're going to get locked into all the Electoral College. There are a couple states that kind of split that, but I won't get into that today. But anyway, or it also discourages voter turnout. Hey, my vote's not going to count. So, and my candidate's not going to win. You go to Connecticut and you try to vote for Donald Trump, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that stay home saying the state ain't going to, they're not going to vote for him. I'm staying home. He's going to get all 7 Electoral College votes in Connecticut. Yeah, they have 5 congressmen, and of course, they're requisite 2 senators. So it's, they stay home, which is not a good thing, right? It's not a good thing. So a little bit about Electoral College. Again, remember, each state gets an Electoral College vote for each senator. That means every state starts out with 2. And then you also get 1 for every congressperson that you have from your state, all based on population. So, you know, again, if Connecticut has 5 congressmen, and that means they get 7 Electoral College. Arizona has 11 Electoral College votes, 2 senators and 9 congressmen. Here in North Carolina, we have 14 congressmen and 2 senators. 2 senators like everybody else. So we have 16 Electoral College votes. I think that's the right count. Yeah, check that, but I'm pretty sure that's the count. So you see how it works, right? So bottom line, it was established as a compromise. I think it was brilliant. Between the balance of state and popular interests, again, the federalism aspect of it, where we want the states to weigh in on electing, when I say the states collectively, and the people. So this was their compromise behind that. So we don't necessarily, and again, a lot of these episodes are kind of Venn diagrams with each other, but we don't necessarily teach these type of things to the depth and understanding that we need to teach them. Hey, look, you can still disagree with Electoral College, but first have a good understanding of it before you opine, and not just default to, like I said, a low resolution argument. Well, don't you think that anybody who gets more votes should be the president? Yeah, Charlie, that makes sense. No. That's not, it's a lot more complex than that, especially when you understand how our government has been structured. Okay. So hope that helps. Hope that helps you at least understand it. And it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to agree. Those of you who are on the fence, hopefully you will see the beauty and the brilliance and the genius in the Electoral College. These founding fathers were brilliant how they thought about things. So I'll leave you with that. Hope this helps. Episode 55, The Genius of the Electoral College. Stay safe. God bless. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to The Constitution Solution, one podcast under God. The Constitution is the solution to most of our country's problems. Other episodes can be found on our website at 1787solution.com, YouTube, Rumble, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and most other podcast platforms. I'm your host, Mark DeLuzio. Until next time, may God bless you, may God bless America, and may America bless God.